Hey friends, thanks for joining us today for a show about the idea of the mother, the archetype, the symbol, even the goddess in ancient history. The idea of mother, something that is a little bit foreign to Stacy and my experience growing up, but an important one perhaps for you. If you come across this episode today and you find yourself in need of maybe a creative way of thinking about a problem or an opportunity, well, maybe this show's for you. And friend, if you hear any sounds, the frolicking of children or the barking of angry dogs or even the whining of our own dog who's sitting in the van and looking out at the beautiful expanse beyond her, but sometimes she smells other people cooking actual meat. In any case, thanks for being with us, friends. This is a show for us to sit back and relax and just kind of meditate on what it means to nurture and be nurtured. Let's go.
Right run. Three, zero, the reins.
All ahead full.
All right, Stacy, you're a mama. You've got a mama.
Yes, indeed.
And sometimes when we think about this idea of the foundlings, the kids and younger people that come into our life that we enjoy kind of establishing a kind of relationship with, it's usually very very much a mutual relationship, but there's a nice role sometimes for you to be a mama to the foundlings, the mama bear, the protector, all of this. But for you, when you think about the image of the mother in your own life in the Tao Te Ching, is this something that's a powerful image to you? Like what comes to mind?
Well, it's interesting because a lot of times, especially from my religious upbringing, the role of women was pretty lacking. They were supposed to be the Marthas in the kitchen.
Right.
This is
referring to a
Mary
story
Martha.
Where, yeah, Jesus has got himself situated, meditating with this Mary, and then her sister Martha is, you know, chopping up the food and getting all going, doing the good mother's role, doing the good woman's role.
And then she gets mad and says, "Jesus, aren't you going to make Mary, you know, come help me," type of thing. And usually in the church services that I've been a part of, they usually would say, you know, sometimes women are Marys and sometimes they're Marthas, you know.
In our religious tradition, women were best suited for running the potluck,
right?
Not being goddesses themselves.
Or even just sitting there listening to the teachings of Jesus, because that's the other thing.
Yeah, or even students, I see. Yeah.
You know, yeah, because... They were to be busy getting to work.
I was aiming a little high with the goddess business.
Yeah. But the men, you know, the men were the ones that would be talking about those higher things, those things about God. And then the men were supposed to go home and then bring it to the families.
Yeah.
And so maybe, I don't know, it's strange. It's almost as if, you know, women could get crazy ideas or something if they were taught some theological principles. I don't know. But it's just, I guess, in a certain sense... if you give women that role, well, then I guess you can sit around and have all your needs taken care of while you're sitting there, you know, discussing God, philosophy, whatever it is that you might want to. I don't know. So it's like you can almost be a quiet listener, observer. Mm-hmm. But if you say anything, it's as if, like, oh, you just don't quite understand. Anyway, that was my experience.
Yeah, yeah.
So when I'm thinking about, you know, I guess in some ways I used to think, the Holy Spirit must be sort of a feminine presence. But in my religious tradition, no, like all the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit were all male figures. And no, women, they didn't have that role in any of it. God is completely male. And so I didn't know what to do with any kind of, there wasn't really an acceptable, strong mother figure or definitely not a goddess, you know, or a divine feminine.
Yeah.
And I heard of Mother Mary, you know, I know Catholics worship Mary.
Well, I mean, they venerate Mary to be technical, but yeah, like that's... you know, but that there's the devotion to Mary in the Catholic Church we did not have in Protestantism. And it was something that was very uncomfortable. The idea that the Holy Spirit or Ruach is a feminine concept. This idea of Sophia in the Hebrew mm-hmm. Bible. We've talked with Heather Davis about this, you know. And that this is something that people have not just ignored, but militated against. For us, one of the big problems we had with the Catholics growing up was their thing with Mary. And I think we intuitively knew that this idea of incorporating this kind of pagan-seeming archetype that the Catholics had going was all too close to what other non-Christian cultures had by way of venerating some kind of maternal figure.
And I think what happens with that, though, is young women, they don't really have anywhere to turn to look up to for a role model for what that looks like, other than being quiet and being in the kitchen and having a lot of babies. You know, that was, that was kind of the role.
To be fair, that was kind of Mary's main, you know, resume point.
If nothing else, being able to grasp onto Mary as a figure of something, at least as a model of some kind, is that often that's where you go where you're looking for something when you need compassion or you need to cry your pains out to something. And I think it's that God just feels so inaccessible and that God is the one that reaps judgment, you know, or whatever.
The Father deity.
The Father deity. And he's the one that's going... You know, he doesn't...
He's mad.
Yeah, and so...
He's going to spank you.
You need to cry to somebody. Uh-huh. You need to,
You need an intercessor.
Yeah.
Or in the case of the Catholic theology, a mediatrix. You need... You got this sense that the divine masculine is just out to kick your butt, and you need somebody to intervene. And maybe there's rumors that God will punish his son instead of you. But really, there's something very comforting at a deep psychic level, it seems, to having mom intervene. But lest we get too hung up on Catholic theology.
So as we turn to the Tao Te Ching, I was thinking, what does Lao Tzu say about the mother? Thinking about that archetype, I was thinking about a lot of women, as they're portrayed as characters in movies and things, and trying to see if there was, a strong female figure that mm-hmm. kind of seemed like a role model and they Disney loves to villainize women often.
Yeah, certainly the stepmom.
Definitely the stepmom. But women aren't always that smart, or they're waiting around for a prince.
Yeah,
or,
in the early days, for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
They have since tried to rectify this.
Yes, definitely. So then, what is the Tao Te Ching? What's the role of the mother with Lao Tzu? So I was looking to see, everywhere that mother shows up, and I'm going to start with chapter 6 because chapter 6 is actually kind of a bridge to what we were talking about last time with the valley. It shows up in one of the same chapters we talked about, and so I'll go ahead and read it. The spirit of the valley is deathless. She is called the mysterious mother. The womb of the mysterious mother is called the source of heaven and earth. It flows endlessly, almost imperceptibly. Tap into this, it never runs dry. So the spirit of the valley, not only is it deathless, mm-hmm. it's called the mysterious mother. Now, when we were translating mysterious, sometimes it can have, be dark mother, but it's like this, like almost like voidness or this something beyond
deep upon
light.
Deep.
I
think that's why I dig we've got the Guan Yin statue with a black face. And the same as, something very powerful about the Black Madonna, this sometimes with Kali, mm-hmm. the goddess in Hinduism. There's something very interesting about that and the concept of yin, the concept of deep oceans, the depths of the womb. But basically...
The depths of the whale, like a well.
Yeah. And the well of all things. So in a sense, the Tao is the mother goddess's vagina, if I may, because that's... you know, I think what I get from the characters that are in there and where it's going, in the sense, or the womb, certainly, but like flowing out of the Divine Mother is existence.
Yeah, and notice that it says that the womb of the mysterious mother is called the source of heaven and earth. I'm wondering, because I know that there's also mention in the Tao Te Ching of the 10,000 things, but it doesn't say that the mysterious mother is necessarily the source of the 10,000 things. I mean, indirectly, yes, but it's like there's heaven and then earth.
Mm-hmm.
Or no, it's one and then isn't it two and then the...
It may be that these things, I mean, certainly are probably compiled. The Tao Te Ching is probably compiled from a variety of sayings, and maybe it's been added to by different voices. This one seems to be really old, or just something that stands out as the most, I don't know if I would say religious, but theological of the texts. Everything else seems pretty straightforwardly philosophical. And here you do have the sense that maybe this is a deity, but I don't think it has to be. It's an archetype. It's another way of, I think, I really think that it's entirely possible that the original author wrote this idea down, the Divine Mother, and had in mind something very much like the symbolism that is appropriate to the Tao itself.
Yeah, well, and I have another chapter to read, but before I do, to that point, that last part where it says it flows endlessly, almost imperceptibly. So it's like, it's that, it's eternal, infinite
flow.
I'm going to go ahead and skip over to chapter 25. I think that's where I see another, it's a little more direct. Something formless and void existed before heaven and earth were born. It is quiet and ephemeral. An unchanging unity. Its perpetual energy courses through everything. It's like a battery that never runs low. It's the mother of everything that exists. I do not know its name. The best I can do is call it Tao. You might call it magnificence. This magnificence leads to the beyond. The beyond points to the transcendent. The transcendent returns back to the humble center of existence.
Some renderings say whatever this mysterious mother is, it's maybe older than the father god.
Yeah. The gods like arose later. It seems like it's before any of that. It's like that darkness, the void, basically, right?
I've been hearing a little bit about this. I don't know if it was on TikTok, but it's this idea that you find this even in ancient Hebrew texts, almost this idea that the gods arise from nature. So there's nature first, and then consciousness arises from them, or arises from nature, and that then can take on like the spirit of the ocean or the spirit of a star. But it's not that the spirit was first and then the star was born, or the Neptune existed and then the sea was born, but rather the sea and our conceptions or the energy or something surrounding the sea brings about or has the ability to allow this deity to emerge, if that's true in some Near Eastern sense. It seems to have a pretty ancient root, that idea that before these gods that are up to whatever they're up to start doing their thing, there was some source or some natural force that was able to provide the universal womb for everything to emerge from, including the Zeus's and the even maybe the Moleks, which is part of the problem because mama has some babies that are a little mean to us. You know, like, you know, most people, if you have multiple siblings, it's possible that one of them bullied you or something. And so you get this idea that the pantheon, the deities in the sky that emerge, some of them might be nicer than others.
It is interesting. I cut this chapter off short, but if I continue, it says, so the Tao is sublime. Heaven, earth, and humanity are also sublime. See how there are four sublime realities in the universe, and humanity is included? This is because at their best, folks know how to create art out of earthly things. Meanwhile, life springs up from earth as it receives the blessings from heaven. Heaven's wellspring is the Tao. Behold, the Tao is its own font.
I do like that one. The Tao is its own font. So, what do you think? What does that mean for us?
It's providing a certain life that comes up out of things, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting because when you think, when you connect the mother as being basically the Tao, and the Tao is the way,
mm-hmm.
so it is the source of everything,
mm-hmm.
but it's not labeled as the creator of everything. It's right. the folks and the things that know how to create art that come later, right?
And they make it out of the natural world.
They make it out of everything. Yeah. But there's something interesting when I think that when we make something and when we say that we've created something, there's an ownership that kind of is implied.
Mm-hmm.
With that often.
A trademark.
And
this is my intellect. We are God's intellectual property. We cannot be used for any purposes not foreordained.
Yeah. If you make something, you're usually like proud of it. And it's almost like it's part of you that mm-hmm. has been birthed out. But this version of mother being the source is just the source. It's not the creator of everything. And it's, so there's not an ownership or a controlling aspect to it, which I think is what, to me, the beauty of it all is, because if you can sort of give birth to something, if you could be the source of something and yet let it go and flourish and be what it is meant to be, what it becomes on its own, that's where true beauty lies. That's where you can see something just shine in its own element, rather than just being sort of this different version of you, right? That or an expression of you.
Yeah, and that makes a lot more sense as we're sitting here in this beautiful Edenic setting, this garden-like setting of the forest near a river with all the beautiful animals flying by or crawling by. We saw a snake. We were just sitting there
in
the beautiful,
did.
Warm sky.
And it was swimming around. It was weird to see it like swim. We were in this little warm patch of water. The river's pretty darn cold. It's all the melted snow that's coming, you know, from the mountains. But there's one little area that it kind of is a side little thing, and it's pretty shallow, so it gets nice and warm from the sun.
It was just chilling with us.
And I saw the snake just sort of also like play in that warmer water, because the rest of the water was really cold. Then it got up and got all warm again.
It's nice being where there aren't as many or no rattlesnakes. You know, like we used to always see rattlesnakes, and now we've kind of escaped all that. But the reason I mention it is there's something really uncanny and odd about that as we were kind of contemplating this, you know, the serpent shows up in our Eden and is having a good old time, and it was very positive. It was like mm-hmm. a very positive thing. But there's this idea that I think the lack of control, but the naturalness, I mean, that's certainly a very Taoist concept. It's all throughout the Tao Te Ching. It's the naturalness of nature
mm-hmm.
and letting it be and letting it thrive. And it tends to do really well when it's not micromanaged.
Yeah.
So there's something about the joy of letting things be free, but having the resources and the nurture to be able to do amazing things. And I think, friends, if you're listening to this, you might ask yourself in your own life, are there areas of your life when you can let them be a little bit more natural and free and yet give yourself the resources to be able to thrive? Maybe you need more sleep. Maybe you need better nutrition. Maybe you need more time in mindfulness. Maybe you need to eat more. You need, like, you know, sometimes we find ourselves really tired. We realize we haven't eaten all day.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you just need to take time for self-care. But there is a way in which that action, the action of nourishing and sustaining yourself and people you love, is more powerful than trying to micromanage control.
I think a lot of times people think that their children are little mini thems, or or so much of a reflection of them. So they want to control what their children are doing or who they become, because it will make them look better or worse depending on what their children do.
Yeah. And very much about ego.
Yeah. It's their own ego, which is a good segue here to chapter 52. This is the final place where I've seen the mother, at least, or at least for today that we're going to discuss.
In the Tao Te Ching.
In the Tao Te Ching.
You've seen moms on around the campsite here.
Yes. The world has a source. Let's call it the mother of everything. Once we recognize the mother, we come to understand her children. Understand this, and you can keep close to the mother's ways, and you will no longer live in fear of death. Practice silence, maintain healthy boundaries, and you'll live a peaceful life. Talk too much, remain frantic, and you'll never find peace. So when you see children, and when you see that they are flourishing, then you know that these children lived in a nurturing environment. You don't even have to meet the mother to know that there has been some sort of nurturing, I would say, in somebody's life in some way, shape, or form that has helped them get to the point where they can flourish.
Yeah.
And whatever that is, I think you're tapping into what truly is mother. If sometimes if you see children that are just replicas of, say, their parents or their mothers, well, you can see that too, but then you also see that they haven't become a person. And then you would know that their mother probably isn't their own person either.
Interesting, yeah. Yeah, in both cases, it passes on. The phrase, or the way Jesus would say it, was, wisdom is known by her children.
Yeah.
And he's probably quoting something earlier than his own time. But wisdom is known by her children. The apple doesn't fall far from the tree. This idea is really important for us as we even consider the associations we have, the systems we find ourselves taking part in. You know, if you think, well, on paper, everything looks really good related to this religious community or institution, but everybody that you know is sad, or most people are sad, and a lot of people are having really bad times of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not sustaining, then maybe that's not the real mama.
Yeah. And not to say that
or the healthy
every
mom.
Every person that's like a healthy person had a great mother. Definitely, you know, you can overcome a lot of things.
Or that every time the kids go off track, that
they had
it
bad
was
parents.
Mom's fault,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah. But there is that sense of which, if you think of the mother as being the Tao, you know the people that are following the Tao. When you meet them, you know who they are, and if you keep close to the Tao's ways.
Mm-hmm. Which is nature, with naturalness.
Right, naturalness. Then you will no longer live in fear of death, it says. I think because you trust in the whole process of the source. You trust in the whole, that whatever that is, that flow.
And I don't know why it is, but staring at all of these green things around us and feeling the breeze and even the little weird bugs does give me that intuitive sense without overthinking it.
Mm-hmm.
I remember spending so much time for so many years kind of worrying about the problem of death as a concept, let alone grieving people that we've lost.
Mm-hmm.
There's something very powerful about being in nature to remind you, now I'm close to the source. I'm close to essentially mother's breast and nourished and sustained. And there's a kind of okayness about the world. I almost think that that's part of the point of capitalism or authoritarian religion. They want to separate us from that. Paganism is bad, but paganism is just religion, you know, I mean, historically, it's just a religion that arises from the land.
Mm.
And that's the whole etymology of it. You know, it's people that are tied in with nature. And other weird things perhaps too, but that's kind of part of it. And so I think another takeaway for me is just to not let it become a new age cliche to recover the importance of the divine feminine, but to recognize how in so many ways, symbolically and politically and ritually, that's important for us to actually do, to kind of honor the feminine, but also the sustaining and nurturing, life-giving nature
source,
of what that source is. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so for people in their own lives, you know, maybe a very practical way to do this is to let your body feel the natural world a little bit more, especially if you're living in an apartment complex with climate control, and then you get into your climate-controlled car and you go into an office with climate control and fixed lighting, and you don't really have a way of getting in touch with the natural world. Wherever you are, get outside a little bit. You know what I'm saying?
Right. It's interesting because...
get to know your mama.
We were just walking. It was a very hot day in Portland. We were walking down the street, and we were walking in one of those areas where they had, you know, kind of torn down some of the older homes and built the big more like, you know, apartment style live or townhouse style, but like larger, you know, multiple houses in a row, like
investors
row homes
come in
that were all attached.
Yeah,
that were kind
of, they gentrify it. There are some advantages because, of course, if you have a whole city with just single family homes, this makes it difficult for people to afford
housing.
A home.
The streets that had those buildings were at least 10 degrees hotter.
Yeah, they were cooking.
Than the ones that were tree lined and had a lot of, you know, greenery around it. And so that idea of even nature kind of supplying you that shade and cooling things off, you know, when there's the heat, it's like the reprieve you might need.
Oh, it's amazing how the houses that have good tree cover, or even
so
like Sydney's work, we don't even need to worry about it. We were just sitting outside because it was under this big old beautiful, beautiful tree. It was a massive tree, and it kept it cool, and the breeze comes through. You do it any other way, and we did, and it's just heat would be bouncing off walls even, and it was pretty heavy. And that's kind of the difference between, you know, Bob the Builder.
Concrete versus, you know, being out in nature. And anyway,
Or at least having the concrete integrate with nature better.
Yeah.
You know, it's not.
Yeah, I know for me that whenever I get out in nature, it definitely, I feel refreshed.
It changes the vibe.
I feel invigorated. You know, I feel like I see, there's life all around us no matter where we are, but it's, you see the whole world kind of come to life. If everywhere you look, there's little bugs and creatures and birds and, you know, especially as we were sitting there in the water, and I can just see all these little
baby salmon.
Yeah, little baby salmon, all these little bugs that are like laying on rocks and these.
Oh yeah, the bugs were cool themselves.
And those other little, like there's these like little bugs that like attach all these little pieces of, like tiny little pieces of rock
debris
and stuff to them. And so they become like these like beautiful multicolored, like shell-like thing, it seems. And then they blend in perfectly with all the rocks. You don't even know that there's a bug there.
I don't know what's wrong with me. I must not be mindful enough. And I'm a middle school teacher now. I should know what the heck this nymph is, this creature. But I'm not sure why I wasn't more fully aware in the first four decades of my life of the fact that there are these little river hermit crab type insects that all look different because they've got different costumes on in this crystal clear water.
Based on what they collect.
I'll take it. That was a pretty good entertainment.
Yeah.
Especially since we got to listen to Jaw 9, which maybe is a good way to kind of bring this to a close. That great song.
That a spiritual woman is the greatest threat to the status quo.
Is that the line? The one. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that is interesting. And in that song, she really talks about the power, the beautiful power that a woman has. You know, there's that aspect of mother that is nurturing, but also the protection piece.
Yeah.
Right? And so
I think that's something we learned when we saw that one statue of Guan Yin who kind of looked tough. Mm-hmm. In San
Diego. The
mama
bear.
Yeah, and you're like, well, isn't the Guan Yin mother figure supposed to be nice? And, you know, maybe sometimes that energy flow and sometimes seeming volatility can also help shake things up.
Yeah, when you're using it for good. Here, there is one odd thing, and I don't know, maybe this is too much, but when we were watching the documentary with the Menendez brothers...
Oh, dear. Yes. Did we finish that?
No, we haven't entirely. But yeah. It does seem to suggest that, for anybody that doesn't know, the Menendez brothers murdered their parents. And according to the documentary, it points out that that happened after they found out that their mother knew that they were being abused all of their lives.
And seems pretty clearly to be true.
And so here they thought they would be protecting the mother by almost having her not know that the father was doing this to them.
Yeah.
But then when they found out that she knew the whole time.
Deep betrayal.
Then it was over. Then it was like their whole world, like that just changes everything, right? That you now have this mother figure who should have been protecting and nurturing, and if she knew about it, why did she not get you out of that situation? And instead she knew about it and went along with it. That's painful. That's really painful.
Well, I think that's an interesting example of a very extreme way, but one of the many ways in which I think people, whenever they're dealing with the father archetype or the mother archetype, can have very negative responses. Mm-hmm. It can be an uncomfortable feeling because maybe you've lost a very nurturing mother. Maybe you didn't feel like your mother was nurturing enough. I'm talking about mothers now because this is the image we're talking about today. But, you know, like because it's so important, because it's so powerful, as I said, kind of early, it has the chances are very good that it's always going to have some imperfection that's going to be very traumatizing. Yeah.
And there's so much potential there for so much beauty. So it.
And therefore, when mom's body shaming you or.
It
hurts. Putting you down. Like when I see that, you realize like that's also some of the worst human experience, you know. I suppose there's also like dad being disappointed in you and these sorts of things, but those parental figures of any kind, but certainly the nurturing mom being less than the nurturing, whatever it is though, friend, when you think about these images and archetypes in your life, the point isn't to just think of it from the one angle. You can think of it and ponder it from both angles. How is it that there's a sustenance to this idea of mother? Or how is it that there are certain other negative emotions that arise or longings that arise? It in a certain sense, as much as we want to have compassion on ourselves and others for experiencing that, it doesn't really matter what you discover as long as you're facing the truth, you know, and then wrestling with it.
And I feel like that archetype can ring true to anybody. You don't have to be, you know, have given birth to a child in order to have been that nurturing, feminine presence, offering that that energy that is life-giving and that is supportive and allows things to flourish and grow.
Hey, so friends, make sure you love your mother. Take care of the natural world around you. And until next time.
Peace upon peace. Thank you so much, friends, for joining us for this episode of the Protect Your Noggin podcast. You want to join in on the conversation? We'd love to respond to your questions or comments on a future show. You can record a message by going to protectyournoggin.org and clicking on the blue voice message button. And don't worry about getting it perfect, since you'll have 5 minutes and a chance to preview your message before sending. You can also send an email if you're not comfortable with leaving a voice message. Please also follow us on Twitter at the PYNP. And rate and review us on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you found this show of any help, why not share it with a friend? Until next time, peace upon peace, friends.
But he said there wasn't any letter. He said I was going out of my mind.
Not going out of your mind. You're slowly and systematically being driven out of your mind.
Why?
That's because you found this letter in love too much.